This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. In the fight against COVID-19, the United States has hit a tipping point. There's now more vaccine capacity available than people who are willing to get the life-saving injection. The level of vaccine hesitancy now is so high that reaching herd immunity is something that may not be likely to happen, which will have consequences. So why are so many people refusing to get vaccinated? If you haven't gotten your shot yet, what's your concern? Maybe we can help you with that. And you can call in. The number is 833-877-8255. You can call in 833-TPR-TALK. And you can tweet at us at TPRSource and email us at thesource@tpr.org. Text us at that number, 833-877-8255. We're joined now by Anita Kurian, Doctor of Public Health, Assistant Director who oversees the Communicable Diseases Division of the San Antonio Metropolitan Health District. And Anita Kurian, welcome back to The Source.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Also with us, Dr. Jan Patterson, Infectious Disease Specialist in the Long School of Medicine at UT Health San Antonio. And Dr. Patterson, it's great to have you back.
Thank you.
So Anita Kurian, do you want to give us an update? How are things going at MetroHealth?
As far as the vaccination data go, this morning we have the most recent immunization report out already, which indicates that about 62% of our community have received at least one dose, and approximately 43% are fully vaccinated. So it is good news. We are inching slowly towards ensuring that everybody who needs to get vaccinated or who's eligible for vaccination is being currently vaccinated.
That 62%, does that represent the people who are eligible or for the entire population?
This is 62% of vaccine eligible people, which in our community is about 1.5 million residents who are 16 and older, have received at least one dose at this time.
And Dr. Jan Patterson, this issue of herd immunity has come up time and time again. And the question is, if we can get to herd immunity with vaccination rates, then that will be a major breakthrough in the fight against COVID-19. So what is herd immunity and what happens if we don't get there?
Well, we think that herd immunity for this particular disease will be somewhere in the range of 70 to 80% of people vaccinated. But, you know, I think and at this point in time, I think it's useful to think about the immunity we want to reach is the amount of immunity so that there's no more transmission of this disease. And the closer we get to herd immunity, the better it is. But even if we don't get there, you know, if we get enough immunity to prevent transmission, that's going to be very helpful. But one thing to keep in mind is that we do think this is probably a seasonal virus like other coronaviruses are. So even though the transmission rate is down right now, we have to think about the winter and getting prepared for that. So, you know, people need to remember that we may see an increase in cases again because we anticipate this being a seasonal virus.
Our phone lines are open. If you want to call in, talk about your concerns about getting the shot or how you got the shot, you know, what did it feel like for you to get your vaccination, give us a call, 833-877-8255. Marisa is on the line. Marisa, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi.
Hey. Go ahead.
My family at this time has chosen not to vaccinate, just because one of the things that we do believe in is the science. We absolutely believe in science and how much it's helped the world. So, but what we want to do is we want to wait for that measure of over time. And so when we're looking at scientific studies, it's always important to have that measure of over time. How does this react over time? So that is the reason that we have chosen at this time to not vaccinate. It's not to say that we wouldn't choose that in the future, but because we do trust the science, we wait for that measure.
Marisa, can I ask you a couple questions real quick?
Okay.
So anyone in your family that's part of this decision, everyone is pretty good health, doesn't have any respiratory type issues?
Right. So we're all in general good health. And one of the things that we also consider is that, you know, we're in a part of the population that we're very fortunate, and we understand our privilege of working from home. I've chosen to resign from my post as a teacher and homeschool my children. So I'm not saying that my situation is at all like anybody else's. So that's one of the reasons that we've been able to. We use our masks. We do participate in social distancing. And because my husband and myself are able to work from home, then we just feel like, you know, we have that luxury of time that not everybody has. So please understand, we do understand our privilege within our own lifestyle.
And do you see taking the vaccine, that in and of itself has a level of risk, but you think continuing on the course that you have right now has less risk?
That's how we view it. We just see that if we maintain the current lifestyle in which we do, in which we have, then, you know, that our risk is somewhat mitigated. I mean, we can't say that. We still do go out into the neighboring counties and whatnot, but that's where we're at. But
okay.
Ultimately, we're looking for that measure of overtime, and, you know, along with the staying at home and having those luxuries, we also we don't have the immunocompromised or pre-existing conditions that put us in a more high-risk category, and we're not, you know, in the older population as well. So I just think that we have that availability to wait for the science to show that measure of time.
Did y'all ever go to concerts or ball games, places where there were a lot of people in one location?
During COVID or prior?
I mean, is that something that you want to do? Is that something you're willing to forego since you're not going to get vaccinated?
Right, absolutely. Yeah, we don't feel that that's a part of our existence that would be a necessary risk that we would take.
Okay.
We can just choose to refrain from that at this point in time.
Okay. Marisa, thank you so much for calling. I sure do appreciate your candor. And let me get a reaction from Dr. Jan Patterson about that.
Well, you know, my perspective is, having seen the disease in the hospital, you know, in hundreds of people, and some of them not in the classic risk groups of age or underlying conditions. I mean, we've seen young people who have required high levels of oxygen and even had to be on the ventilator. I mean, to me, it's like, you know, you don't want to wait. You don't want to take the risk. You want to go ahead and do what you can to be protected. And in addition, you know, we've seen this so many times in our multi-generational families here in San Antonio, where even if one person is staying home, or even if the people at risk are staying home, there are others in younger generations that bring it into the home. And then these people do get infected, who are at higher risk of having problems. So, you know, I think, and again, it's just time to do it before the winter season and before we see any more surges.
Okay, we're taking a break. We're going to continue our conversation about the vaccine rollout here in Bexar County, and about folks who still say, you know, I'm going to wait and see. I'm reluctant. I'm not going to get the vaccination. And there you are. You know, what are the risks that they're adopting by doing that? And what does that mean for our community? You can call in, tell us how you're figuring this all out for yourself and your family. 833-877-8255. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. We'll be right back.
Traditional Mesoamerican garments often turn into costume when appropriated by tourists or for non-holidays like Cinco de Mayo.
How do we educate the general public to be able to tell the difference between that kind of representation versus the representation that already exists?
Appropriation of Mexicana fashions, next time on Fronteras. Download Fronteras wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. In the next half hour, we're going to be talking about the next generation of weapons that are going to be deployed on the battlefield, directed energy weapons. And these are also, some are, according to researchers, are being used now, possibly on American soil against diplomats. It's been used in Washington, D.C., possibly. What does that mean? But right now, we're talking about vaccinations. And there's a level of hesitancy for folks to get the vaccine against COVID-19. And people, you know, they're making the what they think is the best decision for them right now. But really, is that what does the science tell us? And you can call in and tell us how you're doing this. 833-877-8255. And let's go back to the phones with Vince. And Vince, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Yes, I'm reluctant to get the vaccine, to say the least, because it's still an experimental vaccine. The FDA has not approved it. It's only been out for a short period of time. Every day they're coming out with additional side effects. They are not reporting the number of deaths that have occurred as a result of the vaccine. I saw numbers just the other day that showed that it's many times the number of spontaneous deaths that occur with just the flu vaccine, and yet they're not reporting that. There's a lot of things they're not reporting, and I want to know what the agenda is for pushing the vaccine, that there are other alternatives, treatments, hydroxychloroquine, the ivermectin. There's several things that have shown promise combined with zinc that they don't want you to do, but they want you to take a vaccine that's still experimental.
All right, Vince, thank you for the call. Let me go straight to Dr. Jan Patterson, infectious disease specialist at the Long School of Medicine at UT Health San Antonio. I think the first thing we ought to tackle is these so-called other therapeutics that have been touted, which we heard from our caller, how do you classify those?
Well, you know, there was some initial promise with hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin both. We were actually very hopeful that those would work out. But there have been several studies now, especially with hydroxychloroquine, that have shown that it's not a benefit, and that there's studies coming out now with, you know, the controlled randomized trials with ivermectin that show it's not a benefit either. In these controlled settings. And of course, you know, we are all for therapeutics. You know, we've been a part of the studies here for therapies for inpatients like remdesivir and baricitinib and other therapies that have shown to make some difference. And there are a number of supplements that can be used to try to help outcomes, such as zinc lozenges and vitamin D. And other supplements that can try to help without patients. There's a drug called fluvoxamine that looks promising for outpatients in studies. But, you know, this is a disease that can progress very quickly, unpredictably. And again, the agenda here is just to prevent people from getting COVID, because prevention is the best medicine for this disease. You know, we see people with mild cases who then end up with this long COVID syndrome and have respiratory problems and chronic fatigue and other issues, even though they had a very mild case of COVID. So the
caller asked about the reported of spontaneous deaths from people who have gotten the vaccination. And that's not being reported, although I have seen numbers for that, and it does happen, but the rate is so much lower, incredibly microscopic, compared to the people who actually get COVID.
Yeah, well, I think there's two different issues. I think he was commenting about people, the number of deaths in people who get the vaccine, and they have looked at deaths in people who've gotten the vaccine, and those deaths have not been attributable to the vaccine, and they're the expected number of deaths in that many people. Of course, we're at 100 million or more people who've gotten at least one dose in the U.S. now. And then in terms of people who got the vaccine and got COVID, that can happen. But most of the disease is mild. There have been rare instances of people who are, you know, at high risk that have died of COVID after the vaccine. But that's it's extremely uncommon. And
in the clinical studies, you know, this was referenced as an experimental vaccine. You know, the clinical studies have been done collectively with hundreds of thousands of people. And of course, we have experience now in giving this to tens of millions, really more than 100 million in, only in our country. So we have, you know, there's a lot of experience with this vaccine. So it has the FDA authorization, even though it's not fully approved. It's not something I would consider at this point at the fully experimental stage, because the clinical studies have really been completed and scrutinized.
Well, we can also look at the results across the nation. We're looking at vaccination rates. I mean, there is a substantial number of people who have gotten the vaccine, and we're seeing COVID dropping across the country. That seems to be, you know, right there. The proof is in the pudding.
Yes, that's right. And that has a lot to do with that. And also there's been some cases, of course, the natural immunity. But what we're finding is that the natural immunity can be a bit spotty. Reinfection can occur and does appear to be more common than infection that occurs after the vaccine.
Let me go to another caller. I'm sorry to cut you off, but I want to get to another caller before we run out of time. Yeah. This is Angela. Angela, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, thank you for having me. I am fully vaccinated as of February. I live with a rare lung condition that puts me at extremely high risk. My concern with people who aren't getting vaccinated is they also seem to be the same people who are anti-mask. So I'm wondering just how we can mitigate that.
All right. Well, thank you for that great call. I appreciate it, Angela. So let me go to Anita Kurian, Doctor of Public Health. And, you know, it's not just when you deal with public health, it's not just figuring out how to deliver the vaccines, but it's also trying to help people understand why they need these, why they need to get vaccinated. And are we failing in that role?
I wouldn't say we are failing in that role, because remember, I always compare this vaccine to the flu vaccinations. Flu vaccines are FDA approved. They have been in existence for over 7 to 8 decades now. And we still, the general vaccination coverage with flu is about 40 to 45% of the general population. So is there a lot to be done with educating these young adults to get vaccinated or motivate them to get vaccinated? Absolutely. But, you know, we have been employing several strategies to combat that vaccine apathy that we are seeing at this time in this young, healthy population. But right now, I would say more than hesitancy, what we are seeing is, you know, we've reached the folks who are eager to get vaccinated, who are willing to come down to these mass vaccination sites. Now we are running into those people who are not so eager, maybe need a little bit more convenience to their access to vaccines. So I wouldn't say just yet that the slow rates of vaccination coverage that we are seeing an increase every week, but it is not at the proportion or at the rate that we would like for it to be. But we are seeing an increase. And that tells me it's not more so hesitancy, it's more so how do we make these vaccines easily accessible to our hard-to-reach clientele?
And seems like we now have like walk-up vaccinations. I heard from a friend the other day, they're at HEB, you know, buying dog food, and they're hearing over the intercom, come to the pharmacy and get vaccinated. You know, we're making it convenient. Easy. It's like the best step is no step. Go get the vaccine. And if you haven't done it, because some people are busy and they haven't had time to do that. So Anita Kurian, is that where we're headed?
That's exactly where we are headed. We need to make these vaccines easily accessible and available to folks. Now, you know, we love convenience in everything we do, in every day-to-day life activities we do. So it is more not so much as getting the people to us to get vaccinated, it's more now become us going to them in their own backyards and meeting them at their place of work or at their place of residence to get them vaccinated. And that's exactly what we are doing, is we are consolidating operations at these mass vaccination hubs and doing moving more towards implementing more community clinics or mobile clinics, more in these places where people, you know, work, play, or shop.
So, but Dr. Jan Patterson, UT Health San Antonio, if we don't reach herd immunity, and I guess herd immunity could be a level of herd immunity, but, you know, it seems like we're still far from having where we should be on that. What does that mean? What are the consequences? Does that mean we're still going to be living with COVID? Does that mean I'm still going to have to wear a mask all the time?
Well, of course, you know, there's the vaccine immunity, and there is some immunity from a natural disease that will contribute to herd immunity. But, you know, it looks like that this disease is not going to be eliminated, much less eradicated in our country. And so, you know, there will still be clusters that occur. And, you know, in the winter, we may expect another surge, hopefully not as bad as this last year, because there will be many more people immune. But it just means that we will have to live with it, that we'll still see people hospitalized from it. As far as the mask wearing, you know, I think that as we get to minimal levels of transmission, life can return to normal, but we can expect to still see some transmission because we haven't eliminated it.
And Dr. Jan Patterson, one thing we talk about when we have herd immunity for diseases like measles is like we want to have everyone who can be inoculated because we have people in our population who can't get that shot because their immunity is compromised already. Are we putting others at risk if we decide we don't want to get the vaccine for COVID-19 like that?
Well, it's about like, you know, one of the other callers referenced the people that didn't want to wear masks. And it's a little bit about putting, you know, your own personal freedom over personal responsibility. You know, the wearing a mask issue was, you know, probably more important protecting other people than even yourself sometimes as you go out into the public. And this is a bit of analogous to that. And you know, I think that it just may be where we are as a society, and we should pass some of the vaccine on to other countries who are not as privileged to have the amount of vaccine that we do because they can certainly use it in other countries.
And Anita Kurian at the San Antonio Metropolitan Health District, if a person says, I want to get the vaccine, it's not that I'm hesitant, I just feel so busy. So what should they do? Can they just walk up someplace and get it?
So most of all, I can tell you, all the mass vaccination hub sites here in our community have a walk-up or a drive-up option at this time. The vaccines are widely available at your retail pharmacies. Again, they have walk-up options. We are holding a number of community clinics out, and you'll see more of these in probably your HEB or your Walmart parking lot pretty quickly. We are working pretty closely with the churches and senior centers out in the community. So please feel free to visit our website, www.sanantonio.gov/COVID. We have a dashboard of all our upcoming community events, and these are all a mix of appointments and walk-ins. So feel free to come to any of our community events.
So there's a lot of places you can just show up and you have your driver's license or some sort of ID, you can get the shot. People are also worried about, you know, afterwards feeling, you know, like sick for a day or two. Dr. Jan Patterson, you know, that's a concern.
It's relatively mild, sore arm, you know, fatigue. After the second dose, some may have fever, but usually that's gone in a day or two.
All right. So, I mean, you can think about it. You can spend a day with some creaky bones and, you know, may not be ready to run 10 miles, but you're going to be in good shape for the long run as our nation is still trying to put COVID in the rearview mirror. I want to thank both of our guests, Anita Kurian, Doctor of Public Health, Assistant Director who oversees the Communicable Disease Division at San Antonio Metropolitan Health District, and Dr. Jan Patterson, Infectious Disease Specialist at the Long School of Medicine, UT Health San Antonio. And when we come back from this break, we're going to be talking about the mysterious silent death ray that may be out there that's being used against Americans. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. We'll be right back.